Greetings and welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church on Kirkpatrick Road in Burlington, North Carolina. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. If you'd like to correspond with Pastor Barkman and the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. The Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. Now with today's message from God's Word, here is Pastor Greg Barkman.
Amazing grace.
Well, we want to wrap up our study of Romans 13, 8 through 10, and move on, but before we do, I think we need to look at a couple more lessons that grow out of this text. Now, verse 8 says, "Owe no one anything except to love one another, for he who loves another has fulfilled the law." 4, verse 9 says, "The commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet, and if there is any other commandment, all are summed up in the saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." Verse 10, "Love does no harm to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law." Love does no harm toward a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. You can't say, because I feel love, I can do anything I want to, and I fulfill the law of God. No. What you can say is, if you truly love someone, you will do nothing that harms them. And if you do nothing that harms another, then you fulfilled the law in regard to others. That's what it means. Love fulfills the law. All right, well, let's go back and draw some lessons, and I want to begin by just reviewing very briefly what we learn about the Christian and debt. That's the first part of verse 8. Owe no one anything except to love one another. And what this is a strong prohibition against failing to fully satisfy legitimate debts. As we saw earlier, this is not a prohibition against borrowing, though borrowing is not necessarily a good idea. But it is not absolutely prohibited in the Bible. It is discouraged, but it is not prohibited. That is not what the Bible teaches. The Bible does not teach that to ever borrow is a sin, but what the Bible teaches is to fail to repay according to the agreement when you borrowed is a sin. And this is a strong prohibition against failing to fully satisfy legitimate debts, whatever is required to satisfy it, to return it when agreed upon, to make payments in a timely fashion as agreed, and to continue doing so until the debt is fully satisfied. When you do that, then you've fulfilled the requirements of the Bible. You are owing no man anything. But whenever you fail to make a payment, whenever you fail to return something that you have borrowed, whenever you fail to pay on time, on the day that the payment is due, then you have failed to fulfill your responsibility, and you owe somebody something at that point. If your payment is due on the 5th, and you make it on the 6th, then you have owed somebody that payment for 24 hours. And that's something that I'm afraid many Christians don't take seriously. And that I want you to understand. So, this is a prohibition against borrowing with no serious intention to repay or without reasonable expectation to be able to pay. If and when you do borrow, you better have some concept of when you're going to repay, or else don't borrow. Don't borrow with the idea, I don't have any way to repay this right now, but I'm expecting an inheritance. I'm expecting a windfall. I'm expecting, unless it's a legitimate expectation, not a hopeful expectation. I've known people who have been waiting for a parent to die for years because they are planning on spending that inheritance. That's a pretty sorry attitude to have toward a parent, to literally wish them to die as soon as possible so that I can get a hold of the inheritance. There's certainly something wrong with that sentiment. And I've known people who have borrowed things because they have some hope that they're going to be able to make a big sale. Maybe they are in sales. But that's not a reasonable expectation. That's not what I'm talking about. Now, for example, if you have filed your income tax and you already know that you have $3,000 coming back, let's say, and there's a reasonable expectation that that will arrive in such and such an amount of time. Usually it arrives within a matter of 3 or 4 weeks is the usual expectation. Well, in a situation like that, if you got in a bind and needed to borrow something that you could repay when that payment came, well, that's reasonable because that's certain. The only question mark is when is it going to arrive? But it's coming. It's not a matter of if it comes, it's a matter of when it comes. But that's different from an inheritance that could be years away. I suppose in a sense that's a matter of not if it comes, but when it comes too, if you know you're in the will. But of course that can change. Sometimes people change their wills. And years is not the same as days or weeks. And so this is a strong prohibition against failing to fully satisfy legitimate debts. It is a strong prohibition against borrowing with no serious intention to repay. We've all known people like that. They borrow knowing that they're not going to be able to repay, or with no real serious intention to repay, just some kind of a vague, nebulous hope that maybe they can sometime. But no plan, no reasonable expectation, no promise of any certain income to be able to make that possible, that's wrong. And furthermore, this is a strong caution against overextending oneself in borrowing. It is far better to be overly cautious than overly careless when it comes to borrowing. Far better to be extra conservative than to be extra liberal when it comes to borrowing. When it comes to giving, we all need to be liberals. All of us need to be liberal in our giving to please the Lord. When it comes to borrowing, we better all be conservatives. You don't want to be a conservative giver, a stingy giver, a reluctant giver, but you do want to be a reluctant borrower. But so much for that. We move on to another lesson from this passage, and that pertains to the Christian and self-love. Owe no one anything except to love one another, for he who loves another has fulfilled the law, for the commandments, and several of them are listed. And then it says, are all summed up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So if you're to love your neighbor as yourself, what does that mean? And it does mean that the basic standard for loving others is love for yourself, self-love. But here's what I want to say. That does not teach that we need to learn to love ourselves more. That's what some have made this into because of the modern-day self-esteem movement. Don't you get a little bit cautious, a little bit alarmed by the fact that so many Christian teachings seem to be reflections of what the world teaches? Suddenly, here's some new teaching out of the Bible, some new emphasis out of the Bible. Where did it come from? Well, the world has been talking about self-esteem for a long time and the importance of having greater self-esteem. So here's a way to shoehorn it into the Bible. The Bible says, love your neighbor as yourself. So evidently, we need to love ourselves more. Why, that just fits in perfectly with what the world has been talking about, this idea of self-love, self-esteem. That's not what the Bible's talking about. Actually, the Bible makes it clear that we already love ourselves plenty, more than enough. We do. We don't have to learn to love ourselves more. We already love ourselves, at least in the way that the Bible is talking about when it tells us to love our neighbor as ourselves. Paul expands upon that in Ephesians chapter 5, and he basically says this: no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth it and cherisheth it. And this is the way we are to love our wives, even as Christ also loved the church. Now, what does that mean? Well, it's about as simple as this. You take care of yourself. If you're hungry, you feed yourself. That's self-love. If you're cold, you get into a warm place or you put on warm clothes. That's self-love. If you need clothes and you have money to buy them, you buy yourself some clothes. That's self-love. Now, these are the things that we are to do toward others. How about your wife? Well, if she needs some clothes, buy her some clothes. In fact, not a bad idea to buy her some clothes, even if she doesn't absolutely need them. Any more than do you ever buy any clothes for yourself that you don't absolutely need? Some people do, some people don't. But most of us do. Most of us will see things and say, I'd like to have that. And if we can afford it, we buy it. There's nothing wrong with that. And that's a form of self-love. And most of us will feed ourselves the same way. We don't just, most of us eat just the very bare minimum to stay alive and eat the most inexpensive food possible. No, we enjoy eating good food. We enjoy enjoying our food. We enjoy eating tasty food. We enjoy eating out if we can afford it. There was a time in our lives, in my life, and in the life of my wife and I, when we very seldom ate out because we couldn't afford it. When we first came to North Carolina, we came to start a new church. And I want to tell you, things were very tight, and we lived very frugally for a long time. And frankly, the only time we ever ate out was when somebody took us out. We ate out at other people's expense. And the Lord was gracious, and we had a number of people in the church who were very kind to us and who took us out frequently. Some people very regularly. There was one family that took us out to eat almost once a week, as I recall. Seems like it now. It was almost an every Friday night deal. And that was wonderful because we couldn't afford it. We could not afford it. We could scarcely afford to go to McDonald's. We had to live as frugally as possible. We had to buy our food very carefully at the grocery store and stretch it very carefully to be able to make it. For a long time, I don't remember for how long, but for a long time, our weekly grocery budget for the two of us, this was before we had any children, our weekly grocery budget for the two of us was $15. Now, we're talking about back in the early to mid-70s, so prices have changed a lot since then, but that's still living pretty frugal, isn't it? Even if that's three times that now, if that would be $45 or $50 a week now, you try to eat for a couple on $50 a week, period, and you're going to, it can be done. It can be done. That's not impossible, but you don't get a lot of expensive food there. There's not a lot of frills involved. And you're certainly not going to do much eating out on that kind of a food budget. But the idea is, if you can afford it, you indulge yourself because you love yourself. Well, treat others the same way. If you find someone that's in need, they're hungry, feed them. You find somebody who's cold, give them clothing or shelter. Help them out. That's what it means to love your neighbor as yourself. That's what it means. And we can all do that because we all love ourselves in that way. Until tomorrow, Greg Barkman saying good day. May God give you his eternal peace.